As Graham mentioned, particularly for those of you who are visiting us today, we're almost in the middle of a series as we go through Paul's first letter to the Corinthians. It's a series we began in September last year. We're still in chapter 7. And having said that, we haven't looked at this book every Sunday since then. We have had some breaks from it. We've just had a break for 2 weeks during the Easter holidays while many people were away. So we're returning to it this morning, and we're going to come to the end of 1 Corinthians chapter 7, God willing, this morning. Can I just say, for the benefit of those who are going to be with us in the coming months as we continue through, my plans for this series are that we'll, by sometime in the middle of July, we'll get to the end of 1 Corinthians chapter 11, and at that point we'll pause during the school holidays. And then in September, we'll resume in 1 Corinthians and we'll start on chapter 12. I've particularly taken that decision because chapters 12 and 13 and 14 are particularly relevant and important in the current Christian age as we look at issues concerning spiritual gifts and their use and place in the life of the Christian church. And I think it will be really helpful that we can look at those three chapters successively and consecutively without too many breaks. So rather than begin chapter 12 and then take a break, we're actually going to wait. And we'll start in chapter 12 in September. Also gives me a little more time during the month of August just to spend a bit more time studying and preparing for those three chapters, because they are going to be particularly challenging to all of us. There are many different interpretations and applications of that teaching to be found in the evangelical church, and it's vitally important that we know and understand what we believe and why we believe and how it's to be applied in the church today. And so that's something that you can be praying for, both for me as I prepare and for ourselves as a church, as we are ready to be guided by the Word of God. So, God willing, we'll get to the end of chapter 11, sometime in the middle of July, and then we'll take a little break through the holidays and resume in September. So this morning we're returning to chapter 7. And before Easter, we got up to verse 24. Let me just briefly give you a reminder, a very brief overview, of some of the themes that this chapter has covered. And I really am going to be brief. I'm not going to go into any detail other than to give you a few of the headings that we've considered. And if you've missed any of these and you're going to be continuing to listen to this series, then I would really encourage you to either listen to them on the website, or if you have a word with any of the media team people, they'll be able to give you some CDs. Because it's very important, really, that you have the whole of chapter 7 in its entirety, or you could get things a little bit out of kilter in your thinking. So we saw, first of all, in 1 Corinthians 7, 1-9, we considered the title, To Marry or Not to Marry. And we saw there three particular things. First of all, the Apostle Paul teaches that it is a good thing to be single. He's countering those who would perhaps pour scorn on those who remain single and suggest that there's something wrong with you if you're not married. No, says Paul, it's good to be single. But if you are single, then there is no sex allowed for you. You must remain pure and celibate. Secondly, he taught, if you can't live single and celibate, then get married. Marriage is good. And then we also saw that in verses 3 to 6 of the chapter, he gives us some godly guidelines for sex in marriage. Sexual activity is something that God has created, but there are very strict guidelines as to how we should conduct ourselves sexually. And that's in marriage, for life, one man, one woman. And there are some very helpful, practical upfront, straightforward guidelines for Christian believers there. Secondly, we looked at verses 10 to 16, which talks about staying together in marriage. And we looked first of all at when the husband and the wife are both Christians. Secondly, we considered what the situation is when one spouse is a believer, but the other is an unbeliever. And then thirdly, we considered what should happen when a Christian is married to an unbeliever, but the unbeliever walks out of the marriage. And they were the subjects that Paul covered there. And then the final session was verses 17 to 24, where the Apostle Paul does, as he is prone to do, takes a little digression, a little aside, goes off at a tangent slightly. And he says, actually, on the subject of staying together, everyone, when you become a Christian, by and large, you should stay as you are. You should stay in the job that you're in, stay in the house that you're in, stay in the marriage that you're in. Unless there is something which is obviously sinful that you have to give up now that you're a believer, you should stay as you are and be a godly person now. Be salt and light in those circumstances that you were in as you were saved. And let people see the change that Christ has made in your life. And that was the basic summary of our last session. And now Paul once again returns to the issue of marriage and singleness. And you might be thinking, I know, not again, more on this subject? Surely we're done now. Well, bear with us, because I trust you'll see that actually the things that Paul is going to talk about in this final section of chapter 7 have relevance to every single one of us. It's actually quite broad, the things that he's going to say. And I've got something to say to every one of you, regardless of whether you're married, single, widowed, whatever. There's something here for all of us, and it's very practical this morning. And so the title for this message is Married or Single, Stop and Think. Maybe there are some here contemplating marriage. Well, there are two who are contemplating marriage more than others. I came across this that was written by a man. Of all the girls that ever I knew, I never saw one I thought would do. I wanted a wife that was nice and neat, that was up to date and had small feet. I wanted a wife that was loving and kind, that hadn't too much an independent mind. I wanted a wife that could cook and sew and wasn't eternally on the go. I wanted a wife that was strikingly beautiful, intelligent, rich, and exceedingly dutiful. This isn't so much to demand in a wife. But she's still not been found, though I've looked all my life. And then in reply to that, here are some words that were written by a woman. The only reason why I've never wed is as clear as the day and as easily said. Two lovers I had who'd have made me a bride, but the trouble was I just couldn't decide. Whenever John came, I was sure it was he that I cared for the most. But with Charlie by me, my hands clasped in his and his eyes fixed on mine, 'twas as easy as could be to say, I'll be thine. Now, tell me, what was a poor maiden to do who couldn't, to save her, make choice between two? I dillied and dallied, couldn't decide, till Johnny got married and Charlie, he died. And that is the reason why I've never wed. For how I could help it, as everyone said, when Johnny was married and Charlie was dead. Well, the Apostle Paul brings us to a final set of considerations on the theme of being married or remaining single. And we can smile at a funny bit of poetry. But what does the Bible say? Because that's the thing that's really going to make a difference. That's the thing that's really going to help us when we wake up Monday morning. What does the Bible say? Well, I've got three things I want to say this morning. It has been said that if you're going to preach a three-point sermon, the perfect three-pointer should make sure that all three points are roughly of the same length. Well, on that criteria, this is a very imperfect sermon this morning, because the first sermon is quite long, and the second point is much shorter, and the final point is extremely brief. So, if you're looking at your watch halfway through point one, don't worry. Point one, verses 25 to 35, how to serve the Lord. Now, Paul opens in verse 25 concerning virgins, by which we understand those who are unmarried, because remember, in Paul's mind, if you're unmarried, then you must be a virgin. So he's talking about those who are unmarried. Primarily, it's a phrase that's used of ladies, but it can also apply to men, and it does also apply to men. And he says, I have no commandment from the Lord, yet I give judgment as one whom the Lord, in his mercy, has made trustworthy. Well, he said something similar to this already through the chapter. What does he mean? Well, whenever we listen to the teaching of Jesus through the Bible, or whenever we read anything that Paul or any of the other apostles have said, or one of the prophets if we're in the Old Testament, we mustn't assume that within that single passage of Scripture, they're saying everything that could be said on that particular subject, which is why we're encouraged to take in the whole counsel of God. So in verse 1 of chapter 7, Paul begins, concerning the things you wrote to me. Paul's answering specific questions, not giving a comprehensive thesis on a particular subject. So for example, a month or so back, when we were looking at the issues of marriage and divorce, what I was giving you was an exposition of what's contained in 1 Corinthians 7, not a comprehensive discourse on every issue concerning marriage and divorce. And Paul is saying that there were certain things that Jesus didn't actually touch on in his earthly teaching. And so there are certain things that Paul needs to talk about where he can't actually quote Jesus, because Jesus didn't teach on that particular issue. That's not a problem. Nowhere does the Bible say that Jesus, in his earthly ministry, said everything that there is to say about every subject. And so Paul gives us his own judgment as an apostle, as one who is under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, as one made trustworthy, as he puts it. And so he's speaking as one who is bringing the word of God to us. But he can't actually quote Christ, as he has done in certain other instances. And then in verse 26, he uses this phrase, because of the present distress. I suppose, therefore, it's good, because of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as it is. Why would he say that? Well, the church in Corinth has many troubles, as we've seen already, and there's a lot yet more that he needs to turn his attention to as he continues through the letter. And Paul knows that there's much persecution, both threatened immediately and in the future. And we know from church history some of that persecution that unfolded on the church. Sometimes Christians will make certain decisions because of the circumstances that they face directly, or because of circumstances that other believers are facing. We're in a position where, comparatively speaking, even though there are some very strong attacks on the Christian faith and the church at the moment, it's nothing compared to what other believers in other parts of the world are undergoing. And Paul says they'll realise that they're in a better position to serve the Lord, and they will keep themselves from untold pain and suffering if they remain single because of the present distress. Come on to that in a second. He says it's good for a man to stay as he is because of the current troubles that you're going through and will go through. He says, because of that, there can be a great advantage in remaining single and not being married and not having children. So let's unpack that thought a little bit. He says in verse 27, "Are you bound to a wife? Don't seek to be loosed. Are you loosed from a wife? Don't seek a wife." In other words, he's repeating that message, stay as you are because of the current troubles. Now, we've seen previously that some in the Corinthian church taught that those who are married should get divorced, even when there are actually no grounds for divorce, on the basis that they thought, well, you were just superior spiritually if you were single. And Paul has refuted that. But he does say, in some circumstances, it is wise not to seek marriage if you're single. In verse 28, he's not issuing a commandment to remain single. It's not like you're going to be sinning if you get married. But Paul knows that for some believers, in the present circumstances, in the present troubles that the church are going through, to be married will only add to their heartache. It will only add to their difficulty because of the distress that the church is facing. So in verse 28, he says, it's best for you all to remain as you are. I'm certainly not going to suggest that those who are married should get divorced. But if you're single, it really might be best if you stay single for now. Now, before we go further through the text, let's consider a few examples. In parts of Africa, in recent years, believers have been under severe persecution with threats of physical abuse and injury, and even death. And not only in Africa, in other places too. And in those circumstances, men have had to endure threats not only against themselves. It's one thing to say that I'm prepared to lay down my life for the Lord. But what happens when my wife is threatened and that is used against me? What happens when my wife is threatened with rape? What happens when my wife is threatened with physical abuse or even death as a lever against me? That's very different to me deciding that I'm prepared to lay down my life. In countries like that, parents have had to endure threats against their children. Some parents have been made to watch as their children were thrown alive into burning buildings. Paul is suggesting there may be times when it's best for you to be single. In Sri Lanka, we have heard how some of the young men have been abducted and some have never been seen again from the church. What agonies of heart are their parents going through? Paul is suggesting that there may be some circumstances where actually better for you to be single. There might be areas in the world where ministry is much easier to do if you're single than if you're encumbered with a wife and even with children. To serve the Lord in that particular location, in that particular circumstance, it just might be far wiser, far better for you if you're single. Perhaps that area of ministry, if you went there, would mean that you'll spend months away from home. Much better, much easier if you're single. Perhaps if you went to that location, the financial support that you would get would be so meagre that it would be virtually impossible for a married man with a family to be able to consider it. He simply could not support his family. But a single person could go. They could support themselves. They could sustain themselves through that. And so even today, we can see for ourselves certain situations that that perhaps are not quite severe as we're in. But we can actually begin to see what it is that Paul is getting at. Now, with those kind of modern day examples in mind, let's read from verse 32. I want you to be without care. He who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. Now, Paul's not criticizing or condemning people for that. He's saying, that is how it is. That is how I would expect a husband to be towards his wife. There is a difference between a wife and a virgin. Of course there is. The unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But she who is married cares about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. Of course she does. We've already seen in the first part of the chapter what Paul has said about the relationship between a husband and wife. I don't exist for me, I exist for my wife. She doesn't exist for herself, she exists for me. And Paul says that's how it's supposed to be in marriage. But we can see what Paul is starting to get at. There may be situations where you can serve the Lord better if you're not in that position. Verse 35. This I say for your own profit. Not that I may put a leash on you. That's good to know. He's not saying, look, you've all got to go this way. He's just saying, married or single, stop and think. I'm not putting a leash on you. I'm not saying that if you're married you can't serve the Lord, or that you're a second-rate server of the Lord. Just consider the circumstances that you might be in, or the circumstances that the Lord might be able to send you to and use you. Not that I may put a leash on you, but for what is proper, and that you may serve the Lord without distraction. Paul's not saying that if you're married with children, you can't serve the Lord. But that those added responsibilities will make it harder, and he wants to spare some of the Corinthian believers from that heartache because of the particular distress that they might go through. Consider Daniel and Elizabeth Moore out in Papua New Guinea, where they're serving the Lord. There have been occasions when they have had to withdraw from where they're serving because one of their children has fallen very ill. Now, was Daniel wrong to go out as a married man? No. Were he and Elizabeth wrong to take the children out there? No. But they recognize that being in that situation, being out there as husband and wife, and being out there with young children, will sometimes mean that they are hampered in their work, where otherwise they would not have been. Now, that's their choice they've made. They've made that decision as a husband and wife to be there. And, as we've seen, the Lord is greatly blessing them and using them. But they do go through heartaches and difficulties that they would not go through if either of them had gone out single. That's pretty obvious. It's interesting when you read biographies of some missionaries, how you will read of some who have abandoned their children, and sometimes even their wife, in order to go out onto the mission field. I quoted a few weeks back about James Gilmore. And when his wife died, he sent his three sons, home to England, and he stayed out in Mongolia. Now, I actually believe that this passage would say to us that we're not intended to hold up their example as a pattern that we should follow. Some have made that choice. But Paul says that is not the pattern that you should really be following. And Paul recognises that the married, and he recognises that parents, have duties and responsibilities that they cannot abandon. God does not expect you, and he does not ask you, to abandon your duties and responsibilities as a parent in order that you can serve the Lord. I hope that comes as a relief to some of you this morning. Nowhere does the Lord expect you to abandon your husband, abandon your wife, abandon your children in order that you can serve him. Nowhere does he ask you to do such a thing. A wife must look to the interests of her husband and children, and a husband must look to the interests of his wife and his children. But in certain circumstances, if you're single, consider all these things. And in the light of the circumstances that you can see around you, maybe it's better to stay single, even if it's only for a little while. So if you're single this morning, ask yourself a few questions. How can I use my singleness to God's advantage? How can I serve where a married man or woman would find it so much more difficult? Ask yourself, what extra time, what extra money, what extra energy do I have available by reason of being single that I can use in serving the Lord? Ask yourself, given that I don't have any of the responsibilities of marriage or parenthood, am I really giving myself all out to the Lord's work and glory as a single man or woman? Well, that's some in the congregation addressed. But what about those of us who are married? Well, here's something for us. Let's go back to verse 29. This I say, brethren, the time is short, so that from now on those who have wives should be as though they had none, those who weep as though they did not weep, those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, those who buy as though they did not possess, and those who use this world as not misusing it, for the form of this world is passing away. Well, what's he saying here? Listen, if you're married, you can't use being married as an excuse for not doing as much as you can. Now, Paul's not asking us to do more than we can, but are you doing all that you can do if you're married? He's saying, don't use your circumstances as an excuse for not serving the Lord. That just won't wash. I find it interesting observing certain things in the life of the church. One thing that is a great encouragement to me is to see how many within the fellowship are involved in one way or another serving within the life of the church. That's a great encouragement to me. But nevertheless, you do observe certain things. One of the things I observe is that if there's some kind of function on at the church, I can usually predict fairly accurately which will be the first cars to arrive in the car park without them having been asked, and which will be the last ones to leave. They're usually the same ones, without them having been asked. Because I know that those people, they just have a real heart to serve the life of the church. I know full well also that there are others who, because of other responsibilities and duties, simply can't be in that kind of position. And I recognise that and I accept that. But you notice these little things. When we have a church lunch, I can usually predict fairly accurately which ones, without having been asked, will be the first ones to take themselves off to the kitchen and start doing the washing up. You just notice little things like that. And if there's an extra job that needs to be done, 9 times out of 10, it will be someone who's already extremely busy and who doesn't really have the time to do it, who'll be the person who volunteers to do it. You might say, yeah, but I'm really busy. Paul says, be as though you're not. You might say, but I'm so tired. Paul says, be as though you're not. And maybe go to bed earlier. You might say, well, if I'm really honest, I can't be bothered. Paul says, be as though you can be bothered. No one is asking you to do more than you can do. But are you doing what you can do? No one can use as an excuse their situation for not serving. That's what Paul's getting at. We all do what we can do. So what's Paul saying altogether on this thing? You say, are you single? Use all the benefits of being single for the Lord. Are you married? Use all the blessings of marriage for the Lord. But all of you, do whatever you can, whenever you can, for the Lord. Now, some of that might be outside of the church and we might not ever see it, and I recognise that. And you might be salt and light amongst your neighbours in your street, and you might do all kinds of good things towards them that they might see you're a Christian believer, and I and most people here will never ever know about it. I know that. But serve the Lord as you can. Verse 29 and verse 31. Verse 29, he says, the time is short. Verse 31, he says, the form of this world is passing away. We don't have long to serve him. That's the message. Time is flying. And when you're married, it seems to fly even faster, I can tell you. Debbie and I are married 23 years today. 23 years! Where did that time go? It's our silver wedding in 2 years' time. Only old people have silver weddings. Where did that time go? Debbie didn't take too kindly to being reminded a few weeks ago that in less than 13 years she'll be living with a 60-year-old man. Guilty. What have I done for the Lord? The time is short, people. What are you doing? That's his message. Time is short. Are you married? Are you single? Stop this morning and think. Can I use my singleness to the Lord's glory? When I get married, will we work together as husband and wife? Use all the blessings of marriage to the Lord's glory. Do what you can. Now, more briefly, second point, verses 36 to 38, to those considering marriage. Now, in the New Testament, the father played a much bigger role in deciding who his daughter would marry. Indeed, in some cultures, he still does today. Now, in the West, of course, that's not quite the case, although it is still considered proper to ask for the consent of the father that you might marry his daughter. I was pleased to hear that Stuart had done that with Sarah's dad. It's the right thing to do. But the father perhaps doesn't do as much in arranging his daughter's marriage in our own society as they do in others. Well, let's think, well, let's look at the principles that are there. And if you're single and considering marriage, if it's not quite so much your father's decision anymore, and you've taken that decision upon yourself, well, apply the principle to yourself that Paul is applying to fathers. Now, we've already looked at Paul's arguments concerning the benefits of being single. We saw back in verse 7 of the chapter that Paul acknowledges that it's actually a gift of God to be able to remain single for the whole of your life, and to be able to live single in a pure and celibate way. In verse 36, he's talking to fathers whose daughters don't have that gift of singleness. Look at what he says. If any man thinks he is behaving improperly towards his virgin, his unmarried daughter, if she is past the flower of youth, in other words, she's at the stage now really where she really wants to be married, and thus it must be, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin, let them marry. If any man thinks he is behaving improperly towards his daughter, what does he mean? If a man realizes that it would be wrong to insist that his daughter remains single, he can see here is a girl who needs to be married. Here is a girl who does not have that gift to live her whole life single. She needs to be married. And many of you who are ladies will recognize that desire to be married. You can put yourself in that position. Well, Paul is saying, let them marry. Get married. He said it already in the chapter. He's saying again, it's not sinful, even after all I've said. Let them get married. But in verse 37, he's talking about the opposite. He says there, he who stands steadfast in his heart, having no necessity. In other words, you're a father, and you have a daughter who has no need to get married. So here's a girl who does have that gift to be able to remain single. Well, if that's the gift that she has, you do well to keep her from getting married. Let her use that gift that God has given her. Let her remain single. God has given her everything she needs to remain single. Let her take all those benefits and advantages that a single person has and use them. That's what he's saying in verse 37. And if that's not so much something that fathers do, those who are single can consider those principles that he's giving there. In verse 38, is Paul saying that to remain single is better than to get married? After all, he does say, doesn't he? Who gives her in marriage does well, but he who does not give her in marriage does better. Is Paul saying that it's better to remain single than to get married? Well, actually he is, but only in the context of the distress that the church is going through. Because Paul recognizes that there are going to be ways that single people will be able to serve the Lord through that distress that married people won't. And so he's saying, for single people in this distress, it would be better for them to remain single. That is the better thing, because of what they're going to go through, and because of the things that the Lord will spare them. She'll have less worries, less concerns, less heartache if she's single. And then finally, the last few verses, 39 and 40, and Paul here is talking to the widows. And he makes it clear, doesn't he, in these last verses, that when your husband or your wife dies, the marriage bond dies with it. Now, if you've had a good marriage, your love won't die. Your memories won't die. That bond of love that you've had with your husband or your wife, for many people, that stays with you for the rest of your life. But the legal bond of marriage dies. And so he says, if you wish to remarry, you're at complete liberty to do so. Only in the Lord. You can only marry a believer. Don't go out marrying an unbeliever. But in the light of the present distress, Paul's advice is not to remarry. Now that you're single again, don't go and give yourself all those heartaches and worries and concerns in the light of the distress that the church is going through. That's his advice to those who are single through having been widowed. Well, Paul has drawn to a conclusion now his answers to all the concerns that the Corinthian church have raised with him concerning marriage and singleness and getting divorced and getting remarried. And he's going to move on at the beginning of chapter 8 to other things. But here is Paul laying before us all this practical advice. And his conclusion at the end of the chapter is this. Are you married? Are you single? Stop. Think it through biblically. Think it through as God would have you think it through. As we read in Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 14, we have been saved and cleansed by the blood of Christ in order that we might serve the living God. So let us serve him. Amen.